We're reading from Exodus chapter 4, verses 10 to 17. Moses said to the Lord, Pardon your servant, Lord. I have never been eloquent, neither in the past, nor since you have spoken to your servant. I am slow of speech and tongue. The Lord said to him, Who gave human beings their mouths? Who makes them deaf or mute? Who gives them sight or makes them blind? Is it not I, the Lord? Now go, I will help you speak and will teach you what to say. But Moses said, Pardon your servant, Lord. Please send someone else. Then the Lord's anger burned against Moses, and he said, What about your brother, Aaron the Levite? I know he can speak well. He is already on his way to meet you, and he will be glad to see you. You shall speak to him and put words in his mouth. I will help both of you speak and will teach you what to do. He will speak to the people for you, and it will be as if he were your mouth and as if you were God to him. But take this staff in your hand so you can perform signs with it.
Thanks. So I'm not sure what we're supposed to do with Moses in this scripture. I'm wondering if he's either fairly healthily self-aware or if he's just a really big selfish coward. Maybe he's doing a little bit of both here. Over the summer, we've been looking at characters of the Old Testament and how their character traits and lives are lessons and reflections for us as well. We've gone out of the book of Genesis at this point, and we're stepping into Exodus, where we encounter the subject of this morning's message in the character of Moses. I don't even want to try to give an overview of Moses' life this morning, because he is huge. I think he's probably the biggest human character in the Old Testament. His life covers not just Exodus, but four books in total. Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, the rest of the books that along with Genesis make up the Torah. He's the famous Moses of the 10 plagues. He's the famous Moses of the parting of the Red Sea. He's the famous Moses who instigates Passover, which is a celebration that is still being remembered and used today. He is the one who gets the law from God, which is the key to people interacting and responding to God well throughout the Bible. His acts are a huge part as well of God's identity with his own people. We read constantly through the Old Testament, Yahweh refers to himself as the God who brought you out of Egypt, an act that Moses is kind of a vital part in making sure happens. Even in the New Testament, Jesus goes up onto a mountain with some of his disciples, and there's this big revelation that he's the Son of God, and only two Old Testament characters get to come down and be part of this camping trip with Jesus up on a mountain. And Moses is one of the two guys that makes the cut. So he is a big deal. I don't want to spend the next 20 minutes trying to give an overview of his whole life, besides what I've just done. Instead, I want us to focus on this moment that was just read for us. This moment where we see Moses the reluctant at the start of his appearance in the Bible. So I want us to look together at how Moses engages with this call that God gives him. And then I want us to reflect on how this might relate to our own way of responding to God. Then I want us to look at how God responds to Moses. And I think that we would do well to consider God's response carefully as we think about our own interaction with God and the call that he puts on our life. Whatever his response is here, whether it's selfish or just simply trying to be self-aware, God calls Moses into the work of his liberation fairly incessantly. So this part of the story we read is called the Call of Moses. So up until this point in his life, Moses has already led quite an exciting life. He's raised in luxury as the adopted son of Pharaoh, the king of the world at this point. He has lived well off of his own people's oppression. He has since left this lie of a life that he's experienced. He's already committed murder, and he's settled down as a sheep farmer out in the boonies. He's aware of his people's oppression. He's aware of the injustice of all that's going on in the world that he left, but he is content to just kind of remove himself from it and not be bothered by anyone by living in the rural countryside. But this idyllic off-grid farming lifestyle cannot last. Moses encounters God in chapter 3, just before this passage that was read. And he's asked to return to where he's from. He's asked to do something about what is going on in Egypt. Moses has seen the problems there, and so has the Lord, who assures Moses in chapter 3, verses 7. He says, "I have surely seen the affliction of my people who are in Egypt. I have heard their cry because of their taskmasters. I know their sufferings, and I have come down to deliver them out of the hand of the Egyptians. I have seen, I have heard, I know, I've come down, and I'm here to deliver." I emphasize these verbs because they are a powerful reminder to us of the God we serve and his position to us, as well as I think they're an order that would we do well to remember when we are engaging with suffering and affliction in our own world. We have to see and hear, often physically, in a real tangible way. We have to get to know the problems and what's going on. And we have to come down, often to the place of suffering, if we are going to help deliver it all. So, in this story, Moses has seen the suffering, given his upbringing that relied on slavery for all his luxuries. Moses has also heard the cries, physically. And he knows about the suffering, having lived well off of it for his whole youth. He even did try to deal with it without God, but that ended tragically in a death. And so now, later in his life, after he's run away, God invites him to come down, or perhaps to come back, and to deliver. Moses is called to participate in the heart and the work of God, which God continues to insist must be done through humans like Moses. God will deliver, but it seems that God is always doing this work through humans that he instructs. We're always included, and it seems to be necessary in what God is trying to do. And so Moses does freak out a little bit. Selfishly, or perhaps he's just trying to be self-aware. Perhaps just being cowardly. Moses keeps bringing up good points about why he is actually not suited for the work God and Moses probably both know needs to be done. Moses says to the Lord in chapter 4, verse 10, "O my Lord, I am not eloquent either in the past or since you've spoken to your servant. I am slow of speech and of tongue." Moses is recognizing his own inabilities to communicate. He has both some self-awareness and some fear. He first recounts how he doesn't have enough eloquent speech. He's aware of enough of his own shortcomings to maybe question God's logic here. "Why do you want to use me? Is this what is really going to be the most effective way to deal with the people of Israel?" And I don't think we can fault him for this. I think this is pretty genuine. A healthy self-awareness is fairly good, right? Why should God ask me to do something I'm clearly not gifted at naturally? The irony, of course, is that I think whether we read this statement in the English translation or if we go back to the original Hebrew, Moses' claim here is stated fairly eloquently. "Oh, my Lord, I am not eloquent, either in the past or since you have spoken to your servant." It's written very well. Probably better than I could say it. The irony is in the text, I think, for us to see. Notice that Moses is perhaps maybe just making an excuse. And God immediately reminds Moses who's in control. As Creator, God has given us our abilities, and we need to remember that his bigger plan is at work. A plan that Moses needs to be on board for, even if he doesn't feel like it. God assures Moses that he will be right there with him and will teach him what to say, because God will set his servant free. Now, I think it's important for us to notice here in the story of Moses that God has no prerequisite for Moses being eloquent. Moses was putting his own spin on God's call and on the requirements that he would need to have to fulfill it. Perhaps one that he just seems to think people will want to follow in order, but this is not something that God has specifically required of him, his eloquence. It's in Moses' second response to God here that we learn Moses is actually probably just full of a bunch of insecurity. "My Lord, can you please just send somebody else?" And I think that's fair too. I mean, why the heck would he want to follow this call? Moses has had a good thing going for himself. He's got his own little organic sheep farm. He's set up his off-grid homestead out in Midian. He even has a wife and a kid, at least one that we know about at this point in the story. They're super far away from the powerful in Egypt. They're safe and comfortable in their removal from the injustice that Moses has experienced firsthand. Why go back? He may never come back to the quiet and safe life that he's created for himself and for his family. If he's forced to confront Pharaoh in all of his economic and religious and political power, it could be detrimental to the lifestyle he's constructed for himself. Please, Lord, send somebody else. We can look at this lens of Moses' life and we can shake our heads and even smile at silly Moses, right? Come on, Moses. You don't even know how much God has in store for you. Sure, it's going to be hard, and you're going to get totally ticked off at the people a lot of times, and you're going to want to quit. But in the end, you are going to have lived a life like no other. Like, we know that. We can read ahead and see where this is going. But in this moment in his life and time, Moses doesn't know any of that. He's confronted with the scary unknown, a return to conflict at the expense of his comfortable life. And he just wants God to send somebody else. And maybe this sounds familiar. I often think I'm closer to Moses in this situation than is easy to admit. I have fear too. My faith is pretty comfortable, and my life is pretty safe. I too have a good thing going here. I live a safe, comfortable life. I'm about to be married too. And the allure of removing myself from the world's problems to live in some sustainable way off-grid certainly been a draw at times or an interest as I learn more about the problems I'm complicit in causing because of my lifestyle. I also know where I've been. I know the problems, the addictions, and injuries that I've caused and tried to run from. I don't want to be called back to try and right those wrongs. I have been free of them, and I don't want to engage with them again and try to fix the problems that are there. It's easier to run away than to face the personal, relational, and systemic problems that I'm well aware of. If I'm as honest as Moses is here, then I think my response, and maybe yours as well, would be like this. My Lord, please just send somebody else. When we get a conviction from God about an area that we're called to step into, a nudge to engage a neighbor, a cause that has us passionate, or an area of our life that we need to address and change, we often shirk away. Our culture is all about self-discovery, right? And personal fulfillment. That's an underlying theme of the world we all live in. And our faith often teaches a lessening of the self, an alignment with God's purpose and ultimate fulfillment instead. And this is hard. Our response is often exactly the same as Moses. We can plead, we're just being healthy and self-aware. We don't have time. We aren't good enough. Leave it to somebody else. We're not eloquent, even after God has changed our lives. But our own eloquence is not something that God sets as a prerequisite. The truth will come out that we're probably just being selfish. But God is not willing to let Moses walk away. God insists on setting his people free, insists on setting his servants free. Free from the bonds of slavery and oppression, and free from the need to feel all put together and eloquent before God can use us for great purposes. God insists on Moses being involved and returning to the work he has run from and is aware of that needs doing. So God's mandate here is the liberation of his people, and he insists on doing it through humans. And we can wonder why. Why include us in this grand plan? Why, when we're so insecure, when we're so uneloquent? Is it to teach us? Is it because God delights in us becoming all that we can be? He insists. Moses has to take part in what's going on. And what's interesting here is that God seems to get angry. God is angry at Moses for the excuse he brings for not living into what God knows he can be and needs to be for God's work to be done on earth as it is in heaven. And this is an interesting response that we read in verse 14. The anger of the Lord was kindled against Moses. As I was doing some research for this morning, one commentary I looked at pointed out that this is actually the first time in the Bible that we're told that God explicitly gets angry. The Hebrew word is af for anger, the anger of God. And I think we need to pause and think about this. There's no mention of anger when Cain kills Abel. There's no mention of anger at the flood, only grief. We read continuously in the Old Testament that God is slow to anger, and it does seem that way, as we have to get at least 50 chapters in before there's any kind of mention of it. I think it's fair to make an argument that there was anger, and we can read into the text that absolutely God was angry at these things going on in Genesis and all these countless atrocities. I think that is a fair argument, but this is the first time it's stated explicitly in the biblical text, and I think we need to look at that carefully. The first time we're told that God specifically gets angry is at an individual. I work with the youth at our church here, and I've done a lot of work with young people as a camp director before coming on staff here. And part of my work is trying to encourage young people to take on new challenges, try new things, stretch their abilities, and believe that they can do something when our leaders know they can do it. And it sure is frustrating when myself and other leaders can see the potential that some of our young people have and are capable of that they can't see in themselves. There's something missed when we're unwilling to step into who and what we could take on. God sees our potential. God sees the work that Moses could rise up and do if only he was willing. Moses has failed to live into the call God has put on his life, but God is not willing to let him return to his comfortable pastures. God's liberation project just needs more support if Moses is unwilling, and we get that in this passage in the form of his brother Aaron. God assures Moses that his brother will speak for him as Moses is to speak for God. And again, I think this must kind of suck for Moses. Let's imagine this scene again. We don't know the future of Moses' life. We just have this moment where he's with God and he hears that his brother Aaron is going to take this on. Moses is still stuck uprooting his family. He's still stuck heading to Egypt, only this time he's in the background. His brother is going to be the voice to the people, who's going to be the voice to the opposing powers, the voice that people know is on their side, taking on Pharaoh on their behalf, the hero of the situation. We often like the actors more than we like the producers. We like musicians rather than songwriters. The prime minister is the one who's praised for their eloquent words, not the one who writes their speech. I don't want to say that credit is the goal, that it's all about being the face and at the front. But in this moment in his life, Moses has lost the chance to be who God saw that he could be, a great voice to power that the people would acknowledge. In this moment, he's left with only giving part of his life to God reluctantly, missing out on the plans God has in store for him. God insists on us being involved too. God's work is done through the hands and feet of those he calls his church, those that can't speak eloquently, don't have all the degrees, are smelly, dirty, and selfish. There's a lot of liberation and injustice still to encounter today. God saw the suffering of those in Egypt, and I have to believe he still sees suffering today. Like Moses, God has given us vision in Scripture for who we can be if we're willing. Perhaps, apparently, even if we're not willing. What do we need to concede, to give to God that may mean a step into the unknown, to do the work of God in our neighborhoods, this nation, or the world? And maybe Aaron is a part of your story right now, too. Perhaps you're paralyzed by the thought of returning to the places of oppression that you know full well are still out there. So who can come alongside and help your voice be heard? Or perhaps you know of a brother or sister who fears to speak up. What can you do to make sure the voice is heard to those who need to hear? God doesn't make Moses go alone. And Jesus tells us in Matthew 18 that where two or three are gathered in my name, I'm there among them. God wants us to work together on these big problems, on the little ones too. We have to be willing to start, though. We are selfishly self-aware enough to know that we're not eloquent for someone powerful to take us seriously, even though we're not selfishly self-aware enough to know what to say. God will work. We have the courage to be part of it or not. God will work in us, even when we only give him a part of our life. God liberated his people from slavery, and liberation is still a big ongoing project. I think we have to reflect to ourselves, what are we as self-aware servants going to do? Are we going to be cowards and have someone else speak up and go where we don't want to? Or are we going to accept, as Moses probably should have in this moment, that God will teach us what we are to speak? God will be with us. Even if we are neither eloquent or sure that what we say won't anger the powers that we encounter. Are we ready to grow and learn through an ongoing, awkward willingness to just try, with the promise and the trust that God will set this servant free too?